life or death with me, man. But you know, there's no turning back now. This is what makes me. This is what I am, feel me?
This is the music that I walk up to a stadium with on game day.
When you have your beats, your wireless beats on.
I just play it in my head.
No, I like the visual better of you taking three steps off of a bus and walking into the stadium wearing your backpack.
Yeah.
And you're ready to go. You picked out your best outfit for the day.
And then I play Hate Me Now. Yeah.
If you're a WWE wrestler, this would be your entrance music.
Yeah, man. And it's funny. I've just grown up. I grew up hard. So I grew up in mm-hmm. Carroll City. So you're confident in who you are because you just got. That's the only way you're going to survive. The meat
right.
does not survive. So. You know, and over the years, you just develop who you are. You just discover who you are and don't stray from it. Like, I think the biggest mistake a lot of young people in this world do is they pretend to be somebody else or something else. And, okay, you can pretend. That doesn't mean people are going to like you. People might hate the person you're pretending to be and might actually like you mm-hmm. if they really got to know you.
It's a lot more difficult to act than it is to just be yourself.
Absolutely. And
wisdom from Omar Kelly. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I give that advice all the time. I do it all the time on social media. Be yourself. People will love you and genuinely love you because you're who you are. Mm-hmm. And if you're being somebody else or you're trying to put on airs or fake to be somebody, generally people aren't going to like that person anyway. People aren't going to.
Fakeness is the ultimate unlikable trait. If you can spot someone being fake,
here's the thing.
It's genuinely unlikable.
50% of people are going to love you. 50% of people are going to hate you. Now, if you're being somebody else, mm-hmm. 50% of people are going to, you know,
yeah.
love you.
That percentage does not change.
Yes, that percentage does not change. And then 50% of people are going to hate you.
Yeah.
So it's funny, but that Hate Me Now. Like I'm glad we're gonna get. I call him Sofadamas because I'm still hazing him. He's in his rookie season. My partner with the Sun Sentinel, Chris Perkins. For those who don't know, Chris Perkins broke up with me, mm-hmm. Left me and left me for the Athletic. He's in my face all the time.
Mm-hmm. Your ex sits next to you in the press room.
Absolutely. But I'm with a new boo now, Sofadamas, and you know he comes from Florida State. And I'm glad he's going to be joining us. This first time we're going to do radio together. We sit and we talk all the time. We do videos all the time. And, you know, he had all these perceptions of me based on what people
right.
I
think people could have those perceptions of you if they like follow you on Twitter. And yet, like we do the pregame show a lot together.
Yeah.
And like people come up to you and want to take pictures with you. Like it's like people are so nice to you in person.
It's the weirdest thing ever because people think that. That I'm so hated people hate me and it is what it is,
mm-hmm.
but I've never had a bad encounter ever in person.
Yeah.
Never. Not once.
Right. Because
I mean, and there are all these legends about people punking me and getting in my face and, you know, bossing up on and like, it's never, ever happened, but
yeah.
it is what it is. But even my peers will tell you on the road, like, I don't say this to brag, but I'm quite popular. I can't go to New York. I can't go anywhere without, and it doesn't even have to be where the team is playing, where there are Dolphin fans everywhere. And mm-hmm. I get recognized all the time. I get recognized here all the time. And everybody's always so nice. So it's like,
mm-hmm.
like, it, so.
Can I ask a question? Is the Dolphins fan base almost stronger now away from Miami than it is in
Miami?
Oh,
it's far stronger away from Miami than it
yeah.
is. Like, people who are in Miami think they're good Dolphin fans. That's baloney. They're fraudulent fans. The people who have
I feel like the attendance this year has been pretty poor from Dolphins fans.
No,
like you look at the stadium.
It's okay. It's decent. It's respectable.
You look at the stadium. There's always a lot of visiting fans there.
Yeah,
like for every
there's that's the way it is for every team in the NFL. The NFL is, you know, the game isn't necessarily about the home team. It's about the fan base of the team that's coming to play as well. Next home game is what, Buffalo?
Yeah.
Not Buffalo. They don't have no fans because nobody wants to love Buffalo.
I mean, no, but people that live here that are from Buffalo are going to go. Or if you live in Buffalo.
Yeah, or if you have an affection for the team.
I mean, if you're in Buffalo, you probably planned going to Miami in July.
Yeah, no, that's
before
what
you realize
what,
your team
actually,
stinks.
That's what happens. The big fan base is the hardcore fan base. Like, I wouldn't even call you a true Miami Dolphins fan.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, season tickets is one level. Then there's the next level of fans where they're part of the what road game are all the fans going to? That's the next level of fandom.
Yeah.
And that's the fandoms in Miami that I respect. And you people know who you are. You know who you are because I see you all the time. Mm-hmm. Those fans, they not only have season tickets to the game and show up and tailgate, but they plan the away trip.
Yeah.
Those are the fans that I respect. Not the guy who he might watch it on Sunday, he might not. And yeah, you can call yourself a fan, but you're not a true fan. The guy who can't name the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator, like you might call yourself a fan, but you're not really a true fan.
You show up in front of a television on Sunday at 1 and there's a game on and I'm going to watch
this.
And
want something to whine and complain about.
I can't possibly relate to that. Like, I can't possibly relate to, like, well, I'll turn on the Dolphins game, and I don't know who any of the players are. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like...
You don't know who Kalen Ballage is.
I feel like it's been more common in college, though.
You say, you know, didn't they Dolphins draft, like, two rookie tight ends? Why aren't they playing? who's this Nick O'Leary dude? Like,
well,
yeah.
All the questions I'm going to ask you over the course of the next 3 hours.
Yeah, if you say that, if you're a Dolphin fan and you say that, like, who's Nick O'Leary? Where did he come from?
I've heard he's got a famous relative.
Yeah. Those are the people I don't really respect. Yeah. And I shouldn't say that I don't respect part of my readership, but it is a reality.
Let's be honest, though. If they don't know who Kalen Ballage is, they're probably not reading your work.
Yeah, pretty much. earlier this morning, I put up a poll because to me, this is I've been waiting for this for a while. I've been truly waiting for this for a while. The return of Ryan Tannehill.
Sure.
And I wasn't done. I'm not done.
With Ryan Tannehill?
I'm not done. Okay. I can't be done. I'm not finished.
Okay.
I understand that you've seen him for 6 years and you've played God knows how many games and he's missed 25 games with injuries. I'm sorry. I'm not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
When you last saw him, he had a 17-3 lead over the Cincinnati Bengals, which are right now in playoff contention. If not holding a play, no,
and they were better then.
And they had
healthy AJ Green then.
Yeah, and he had just lost his left tackle, a guy who's having a Pro Bowl season, and they couldn't protect him, and he fell on his shoulder and got it shattered, and continued to play throughout that, and threw some ducks, and then hurt him, gave up 14 points that lost the game for you, and yeah. I know that was bad. Mm-hmm. I know that was bad. And the week before, he got punk slapped by New England. I know that was bad.
Mm-hmm.
But you ignored the three good games that he played previously. You ignored his ridiculously good record with Adam Gase as a head coach. And you ignored the development and the progression that you've spent the last, God knows, six seasons investing in him. And you're just like, I'm done. Yeah,
I mean,
it's like putting all your money for the last 6 years into one stock, but
there's also a financial theory of cutting your losses. I think that's how a lot of Dolphins fans feel: is let's cut our losses.
Cut our losses into what? Well, that's a great question, right?
I'm
glad we can have this educated conversation, and I know we got to go to break, but cut your losses and do what?
Okay.
Because
I've got an actual solution.
Okay.
What if the Baltimore Ravens decide that they want to go forward with Lamar Jackson and let Joe Flacco go?
Joe Flacco and Tannehill, they're both washed. They're both in equal conversation. Joe Flacco's had a
You don't think Joe Flacco's a better player than Ryan Tannehill?
I do because I'm a Joe Flacco fan. But Joe Flacco isn't taking you anywhere, neither is Ryan Tannehill.
Mm-hmm.
So why am I going to commit, and I believe Joe Flacco makes $1 million more trading for Joe Flacco when they're comparable quarterbacks? At this point, Joe Flacco's aged and aged poorly. Joe Flacco's been in the league since 2008.
He's 33.
Yeah. Like, am I really trading for a 33-year-old quarterback who's clearly losing it? Like, I might as well go and get Eli Manning if that's the case.
You'd probably only have to keep him around for one more year after this year. There's a potential out in 2020 in his contract. But, again, we're talking about an upgrade, or just frankly something different.
You just want, see, that's the thing. You want something different. It doesn't mean it's better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I remember when Chad Henne was quarterback in the team, and I was just rooting for anything else.
No, he's just bad.
No, but I remember like when Tony Sperano would insist on playing him, I was like, literally anybody else.
Chad Pennington. And that's what my fear is, that Chad Pennington will have a season like the 2010 year where I was so celebrating and so was the team when Chad Henne had finally been benched and Chad Pennington was going to be the starting quarterback and it was the Tennessee Titans and it lasted all of two plays before he got hit and tore his shoulder. And then we were right back to Chad Henne I was just like, damn. So I'm all excited for Ryan Tannehill's return. And imagine that I sit and take ownership for my spot as the number two critic in America. Big O is number one critic in America. The number two critic in America on Ryan Tannehill, who I don't dislike. Mm-hmm. I have a ton of respect for his work ethic, his commitment. I just know who he is.
Sure.
He's an inconsistent quarterback who lives off the play action passing game. And top shelf, he's going to get you 10 wins. But I can tell you right now, everything that I just described to you, I can't guarantee you anybody else who's another option can deliver that.
Mm-hmm.
Not Teddy Bridgewater.
When do you go back into the draft?
I mean, they have to walk away from this draft selecting a young quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Someone who is at the very least going to
develop,
be a backup. Who's when Tannehill gets hurt, you're not throwing Osweiler and Fales out there who are in their late 20s.
And the problem with that is this is not the draft to get a quarterback.
No, it's not.
Now somebody
2020 is. But not this one.
No, don't even say 2020 is, because I heard that. I've heard that so many times where you look forward to the year later. I remember when Chad Kelly was going to be the great quarterback in the draft.
Matt Barkley was going to be Matt Barkley. I was excited about Matt Barkley the year after Luck.
Matt Barkley was going to be that dude, and they never panned out. Look at the quarterback, Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold, who both suck. They were going to be those dudes.
Half sucked.
No, they both suck.
Well, we thought Jared Goff sucked, and then he doesn't suck anymore.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean, but, and I like a lot of stuff that I saw from Sam Darnold, so I can't, but come on. That's my thing. Rookie quarterbacks, it's not add rookie quarterback, team is better. It's not like, it's not rookie quarterback, add water. Ooh, 10 wins. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Like all the struggles and pains and growing pains that you went through at Ryan Tannehill, you're going to have to do it all over again. And the hope is that the quarterback that you have will be better than a quarterback who can get you at the ceiling 10 wins. Like, okay. I can guarantee you, like, you can go sign Colin Kaepernick, not that Miami's going to, and he'll be better than anybody else out there or any other options that you have or anybody you draft. Doesn't mean that it makes your franchise better.
No. But I guess, like, at a certain point, they have to take a swing on finding Mahomes, on finding whomever, Goff, whatever.
You just want them to swing for the fences instead of trying to hit this double.
They're trying to hit the ball in the gap right now, and I want them to hit it over the fence.
Let's suppose they don't have power.
Right, exactly.
Let's suppose they don't have a swing of power.
Right, exactly.
You're just ready to get an out.
Yeah, you're ready to strike out, basically.
Then welcome to being a Dolphin fan.
Chris Whittingham, Omar Kelly, in for Hockman and Crowder here on QAM. Radio.com.
Radio.com. Bring them out. Hey! Bring them out. Bring them out.
Chris Whittingham, Omar Kelly here in for Hockman and Crowder on WQAM. Lots to get to over the course of the next couple of hours. We'll talk to Robert Littell of Black Sports Online at 4, Manny Navarro of The Athletic at 4:20, and Safi Dean, your colleague at the Sun Sentinel, covering the Dolphins at 5 p.m. Got to squeeze some heat in there as well. The Heat lost again last night to the Brooklyn Nets, and the T-word is getting thrown around more and more with the Miami Heat, that of course being tanking. They're now 6-11. They're drifting. They're 3-7 at home. That for me is the crazy thing, is that this Heat team, that theoretically, if you're bringing back the same team, at the very least, continuity would lead you to believe that an early start could be on the cards for them. And yet they just keep losing at home to the Nets, and they've lost, you know, at home to Charlotte and home to not even the best of the league.
I don't know if they're tanking or intentionally tanking, but...
No, I'm saying, like, could they? Like, could they start selling off their player, like, you know, trade Goran Dragic for, you know, a young player and a first-round pick?
They're not going to be good enough to get Zion, so...
or they're not going to be bad enough to get Zion.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They're not going
to
be bad.
Well, I mean, you can at least be bad enough to be sixth in the lottery, and figure out your way into the top three.
Nobody's figuring out their way into the top three with Zion out there.
I mean, it's a lottery. Like, there, I mean, it's, you know, ping pong balls get shot out of a machine, and
you're not that lucky.
Yeah.
You're not that lucky as a franchise. We're blessed with...
Do you feel like we're going to have another frozen envelope situation? And wow, the New York Knicks get Zion.
The New York Knicks got Zion. Oh, my God. Yeah,
that happened. Yeah, that could potentially happen, but...
Trust me, it's happening.
All right, I wanted to ask you, though...
These teams and these leagues, come on. They need their marquee cities
to be
good.
Well, I mean, the NBA has had a pretty serious period of growth here with gold with... the Oakland Bay Area is a big market for them, but Cleveland and Oklahoma City are not.
Come on, bro. Do you think they want Milwaukee to be good?
No, they don't. They want the Knicks to be good.
Yeah,
and they want the Lakers to be good, and you know, and they want Houston to be good, and they want like these major big cities. But they've gotten to a point where, like, I think in baseball, if Milwaukee played against Tampa in the World Series, nobody would watch.
Absolutely.
Like, there would be zero people watching that. But at least, like, the NFL, obviously, the Super Bowl is all of this proof. And then I think the NBA is at least getting there, right? Where, okay, if you don't have a star in the finals, that's one thing. But,
yeah.
Like, but having...
Who did Detroit Pistons play to win that championship?
It was Lakers. Yeah. No, but the worst ones were when they played the Spurs in 2 years, and every game was 87-79, and it was like, make me watch this.
Yeah. No, they've advanced, they progressed, but they're still not at the point where
they're star dependent. But I think they've had a really good period of growth with the Bulls being bad, the Lakers being bad, and the Knicks being bad. So I'd say at least they've done a decent job of development. But Zion Williamson at Madison Square Garden would be just a level of huge that would just be, particularly playing with Porzingis, that like a healthy Porzingis, that'd be fun. But I wanted to ask you, as it relates to Ryan Tannehill potentially starting this weekend. Again, the trainers can potentially rule this out, but at the moment, the Dolphins are proceeding with Ryan Tannehill as their starter.
They're all in. This is Ryan or bust.
I guess, so you said you're not done with him. You're fascinated to see it.
And you can't be. You can't be if you're a Dolphin fan. Mm-hmm. You can't be so far invested and then all of a sudden say, what'd you say,
cut your losses, yeah. But I guess the question is, how much of an upgrade is it over what we've seen these last 5 weeks?
Oh, trust me, it's an upgrade.
And how big of a bump is it to where, I imagine you're going on the road to Indianapolis against a team that's won 4 in a row, mm-hmm. that quarterback can't stop throwing touchdowns.
Yes.
And you're going in there.
It's not going to be pretty.
Even still,
it's not going to be pretty. You're so depleted from a talent standpoint, mm-hmm. and your execution has been so disastrous. It's not going to be pretty, but it needs to be closer. It needs to be more of Cincinnati Bengals and less of Green Bay Packers, New England Patriots beatdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you can't look that bad, but you need to show some semblance of life. I watched Ryan Tannehill practice and throw football for the first time in 5 weeks to his teammates yesterday. And I shared my thoughts on Twitter. People, you know, obsess about what I think. And they were his balls. Pause. his passes were 85 to maybe 90% of what they usually are,
mm-hmm.
which is they had tight spiral. They got good rotation. He's always got a little arc on it, but he doesn't have much of arc on his ball. He
throws a flat ball. That's why he has a problem with getting passes deflected the line of scrimmage.
Yes, he throws a flat ball, so it was what it was. But they were getting there. Like my number one metric and measurement for quarterbacks is I need to be close to eye level on the field to see you throw a 15-yard out, so I can see one, the speed, the line. And things of that nature.
How long it takes to get there.
How long it takes to get there. And that was at the final, one of the final periods that we got to watch. And he threw it, and it looked good. And I was like, okay, next guy coming up was Brock Osweiler. He, you know, does his 5 steps back, winds up, throws it, And keep in mind, his arm is healthy. It looked bad.
He does not have very good arm strength. Like you would figure, like I've always said that when it comes to NFL starting quarterbacks, everyone's got enough arm strength. Like yeah. everyone's got enough to get the ball to where, like making all the throws. Okay, not yeah. everyone's Patrick Mahomes, but I say a requisite amount of arm strength.
Yes.
The thing about watching Brock Osweiler, he does not have a requisite amount of arm strength.
I don't even think it's an arm. I don't think it's an arm strength issue. It's an accuracy issue. The ball placement is just such disaster with Brock. And, you know, people don't realize, like, I thought I lost a lot of respect for a lot of fans this year because when Brock was winning and when he had the high passer rating, everybody was like, oh, man, we could replace Ryan Tannehill and we've got no drop off. Brock Osweiler's great. Why are we riding with Tannehill? We could get $18.5 million back. Oh, Brock Osweiler's great. And I thought, how stupid are you people? Like, seriously, can you not notice that there's a glaring difference in this offense? Mm-hmm. That it looks, it's, yeah, Ryan Tannehill's a dink and dunk quarterback, but he dink and dunks and builds up to the big shot.
Mm-hmm.
And when he takes the big shot, yeah, he hits it about 70% of the time.
Yeah.
And
he's gotten a lot better with that. Remember, that was the thing for 3 or 4 years. Now I feel like he does it pretty well.
Healthy. And he builds up, yes, this offense is. Got West Coast concepts. We're gonna dink.
This is a point that I made before, but there are two kinds of, because Adam Gase all the time gets hit with, well, you're an offensive guru, you're a quarterback whisperer, this offense should be better. But I feel like there's two ways
both are valid claims.
Agreed. Yes. I mean, I think that his offense has been bottom third of the league for as long as he's been here.
Correct.
They should be better. But I feel like there's two ways in which the modern kind of offensive, you know, the guy you bring in to fix your offense goes about it. There's the Andy Reid, Matt Nagy, Sean McVay. You do it with, you try and scheme players open. You try and create those opportunities downfield. And then I feel like there's the guys like Adam Gase that are basically, you can take anyone, put them in their system and get to a quarterback rating of 91. And I feel like I feel like that's Brock Osweiler. Like, you look at like the kinds of throws that he makes into open spaces, they're easy throws.
Uh-huh.
Adam Gase has schemed Brock Osweiler towards competent enough performances that are not in any way of Brock Osweiler's doing.
You have just put something so eloquently that I had never thought about, never heard, and it is ideally, it's brilliant and it's perfect.
Thank you.
And you know, it's true. Adam Gase can scheme anybody to a 91 quarterback rating. That doesn't mean they're going to win,
right?
Or that
the quarterback is good,
or that the offense is going to be good,
or that the quarterback is even fixed, right? Because the whole idea is you put Adam Gase with a quarterback and he'll fix him. No, it's not. No. He's not doing the fixing. He's making it look as good as it can.
Yes, that's correct. And that is exactly what he's done here.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I have with that theory, though, is, and it's good, it's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
The way you put it is accurate. It hits it on the bullseye, and that's why he's a head coach. He's done that.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, when it comes down to the games, to me, are decided on three instances: how you perform on third downs, and to piggyback, that's one. And to piggyback on how you perform on third downs, you have to be successful on third downs. You have to make what I call big boy throws.
Mm-hmm.
They have to. They, you know, the defense is going to take everything away from you. It's not going to be a dink down time. It's going to be, I got to thread it between this linebacker and in front of this safety, and I got to catch my receiver at the right spot at the right time. And that's just a throw I got to make. Mm-hmm. I got to make that throw. And big boy throws are missing from this offense.
Yes.
And
it's why they run the ball on 3rd and 11.
Stop with that. They ran the ball on 3rd and 11 because Brock Osweiler was their starting quarterback.
Right.
And you know, and then it comes down to the execution in the red zone. Like, and in fairness to Adam Gase, he's always been good in the red mm-hmm. zone.
And they were excellent last year, actually. Yeah. Like, when they got there, they scored touchdowns.
If they got there, they scored touchdowns. Yeah. This year, they're the worst team in the NFL in the red mm-hmm. zone.
Yeah.
And they just got there with Brock Osweiler.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize this, but yeah, Brock's been sucking it up.
When you kick 4 field goals and you, like they had 5 chances to score. And the other one, the snap
fumble.
Goes, the fumble. They had 5 chances to score. And with a better quarterback, maybe those are touchdowns.
Yeah.
Or, by the way, this is something that I don't feel like has been talked about very much. I know you're a supporter of this player, but Jarvis Landry was an important red zone player last year, and they don't have red zone player.
I don't like that. I don't like when people say that. And here's the reason why I don't like when people say that. Because generally, throughout his career, Adam Gase can scheme anybody. Kenny Stills was a red zone threat and still is a red zone threat. He's caught 16 passes. Four of them have been touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
16 passes, four of them have been touchdowns.
It's pretty remarkable conversion. Yeah.
And he's never been the primary target on any of them.
No.
So Adam Gase, can scheme it up to feed anybody he wants. When it was Kenny Stills on a free agent contract, he fed
Kenny. So then what do you think is happening this year? They're just not good enough at quarterback?
They're not good enough at quarterback. Protection is breaking down. And really, to be honest with you, the one guy that they added to help them in the red zone, which was Mike Gesicki, he just isn't what he needs to be. And you spend so much time investing in people, investing in this approach, investing in this scheme, and building an offense that's going to really... I mean, I watched it in practice, and Mike Gesicki was a dangerous red zone player. Like, he scored on the Dolphins' defense all the time in practice. And it just hasn't translated to games. And why hasn't it translated to games? Because Mike Gesicki is a liability in a lot of other aspects of his game. And then when it comes to the red zone, which basically requires quick movement, he's a player who builds up speed. Well, in the red zone, you don't need to build up speed. There is no build up speed.
There's nowhere to build up.
There's nowhere to build up. So, it's such a tragic selection, number one. I thought that selection was a bad selection from the beginning, which is why Mike Gesicki and I, don't have a great relationship, and he's blocked me on Twitter and all this kind of good stuff. But, the fact that I brought up in practice, he's getting ragdolled in practice. Do you really think he's going to be able to do it in a game? And lo and behold, he can't do it in a game. And, there was a parade this summer of Dolphin. Oh, Mike Gesicki's going to be great. He's going to be the savior, going to score everything. And I'm like, dude, he sucks. And reality is he sucks. And, you've got no red zone weapons. Devontae Parker can't stay healthy. Not that he's a great red zone weapon to begin with. Kenny Stills is your best red zone weapon, and he's got 16 receptions this year. And right now he's healthy. I believe that the offense should shift to focus primarily on Kenny. That's my personal opinion. Not all this stretch the field stuff that Kenny does. Kenny can actually do other things other than stretch the field. Like in New Orleans, he played slot. Let's evolve and try to do some of that
particularly
stuff.
Particularly because he's your only guy left.
Danny Amendola. Nothing is working. Nothing is working. Try something else.
Chris Whittingham, Omar Kelly, in for Hockman and Crowder here on QAM.
Radio.com. The Mark 5. I can show you what them blocks
Chris Whittingham, Omar Kelly here on 560 WQAM. Lots to get to. We'll be joined by Manny Navarro of The Athletic at 420, and that will be pertinent because we have breaking news from the University of Miami. A statement has been put out. It is headlined, Jeff Thomas has been dismissed from the UM football program. The University of Miami announced Wednesday that sophomore wide receiver Jeff Thomas is no longer a member of the football program. Quote, we have high standards for excellence, for conduct, and for the commitment of the team for all of the young men who wear our uniform, and we will not waver from these standards, head coach Mark Rick said. We wish Jeff the very best as he moves forward in his journey. Jeff Thomas, the UM receiver, has been dismissed. There was some rumors that were making it through the message board sphere this morning, and they ended up being true. The Kane Sport reported earlier today that he was no longer with the program. UM denied that about a couple of hours ago, but the statement now comes out. Jeff Thomas is out. Would you say, Omar Kelly, that the things that have happened in recent weeks with quarterbacks being suspended and obviously on-field issues accentuate off-field issues, right? When you're a team that's losing, generally these things get highlighted more and more problems tend to emerge. But Jeff Thomas is probably their best offensive player this year, and now he is gone from the program, and it seems a bit like a program that's a bit bereft right now.
I covered Florida State during the Bobby Bowden era, and during that era, you saw so many players. I remember Lavernius Cole, who they called Trouble, because he was generally trouble. Gets dismissed from the team. It's probably too old for you of a player. I
wouldn't have thought of Lavernius Coles. I remember Lavernius Coles as a Jet. I thought he was a good player. I didn't realize he got dismissed from FSU.
He got dismissed from FSU. Did not play in the national championship game. He was a teammate of Peter Warwick. They actually grew up together. Lavernius, I believe, got dismissed for beating up his stepfather.
Oh, wow.
Or the man his mother was dating because I believe, don't hold me to this, even though I'm saying it on radio. I believe like his mother got abused and Lavernius took it over the edge.
Oh, okay.
Now, the problem was he was also part of Dillardgate, which was them getting free merchandise from the store Dillard's. And, you know, that was the last strike. But the point is Bobby Brown had a 3 strikes and you're out policy. Now, Jeff Thomas, I don't know what he did. I can tell you, based on my decade-long experience of covering college athletics, you're not getting dismissed from the team for disrespecting coaches or bad attitude, especially when you're a leading receiver. What you do get dismissed for, drugs, shady, involving yourself in shady things, cheating, and a lot of times that goes to the academic board.
Sure.
And basically, the only time I've ever covered a team where there was an immediate dismissal was when one teammate stole from another teammate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it happens.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know, it's a very small steroids. Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this question then, because you mentioned this is Bobby Bowden when he has a very successful
Remember that Mark Richt is a protege of Bobby Bowden.
Sure, right. And these are, you know, tough guys, they're traditional college football coaches.
No, they're like father figures.
Sure.
And Mark Richt, I know Mark Richt, he is a father figure.
But would you say that it is an indictment of their control of a program, the control over the people that they're bringing in? Jeff Thomas is a Mark Richt recruit. Mm-hmm. He was one of among the first recruiting classes.
Recruiting is just like drafting. You're going to hit on 50%.
Yeah, but
if you're lucky.
But I would say they hit on Jeff Thomas, and now he's gone. Do you think that it can be considered an indictment of a head coach that this has been a steady problem throughout this year?
No, especially in this climate and age of athletes, and people don't understand the evolution of athletes. Because got to understand, I've been covering now athletes. I've been involved in dealing with athletics since 1990. And covering college athletes for over a decade, and now covering professional athletes for over a decade, and athletes have changed. They have evolved. This is the first time I'm really saying this on radio. I say it publicly, privately, and I talk to a lot of the older people. I've just had the conversation with Frank Gore. You know, this generation of athletes, they're ultra sensitive, ultra immature, ultra entitled. You got to understand, the guys who are playing in the NFL are the guys who grew up in the YouTube era, where their highlights are on YouTube and everybody got to see how great they were.
They grew up in the Rivals era. Rivals era, everyone's got a star rating.
Exactly. They've been rated as a star rated player since Pop Warner.
Mm-hmm.
They get booty from Instagram. Like they don't, like it comes to them in their DMs.
Yeah.
This is the entitled era of entitlement for regular human beings. Mm-hmm. And just like this is the microwave society, they want things instantly. I'm not coming to your school if I'm not going to be the only, that was the first, the downfall at UM when I was covering it during the Tyrone Moss, God rest his soul, Ryan Moore, Brandon Merriweather error for those who... Mm-hmm.
Were you there for Willie Williams?
Oh, yeah. I covered Willie Williams at my high school. I was there for the whole thing. And Willie's a great trainer right now. He's working with Strong Arm, and he's training young athletes. Mm-hmm. And Willie, God bless you because you're staying on the straight and narrow. You're doing things right. And you're making an impact in the community. I hope you continue to do that and do the right thing. I still care about Willie Williams. But that era of the Tyrone Mosses and Tyrone Moss had to be the only back in that recruiting class. You could not recruit another back. Otherwise, you couldn't recruit one.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, he wasn't coming. And same thing with some other receivers. I remember, what was his name? He went to Florida State and he committed to Miami and switched at the last minute. I can't remember his name, but he was from the Muck area. He wasn't coming here if you recruited another back. Quarterbacks. I'm the only quarterback. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that was a lot of Miami fans still, I think, feel animosity towards Teddy Bridgewater because that was his deal, that he didn't want to compete at Miami, that he was going to get the job at Louisville, and he wasn't going to compete here.
Absolutely, no question about it. And that's what's become acceptable now. And, hey, you don't want to make me the only quarterback. You don't want to promise me some playing time, a starting job. Sure. No problem. I'll go to Buffalo and become Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
No, well, no, and I don't need you.
I think it's the power dynamic shifting, right? Where before it used to be, you know, high school. Oh, I get to go to college, and now it's an acknowledgement of I have value, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I think it's sort of negotiation as an 18-year-old, and they get to more power to them because you get to, but then eventually it's going to catch up to you, right?
Once you sign that letter of intent, all that negotiation is gone.
Right.
Exactly. I own you now.
But up until then,
they have power.
Yeah, they have power to sort of dictate their terms.
No, yeah, it's right. And I'm more for empowering and entitling athletes, but I don't think they have the maturity to handle it.
Right.
And it translates now to, I've had this conversation with Adam Gase, even when these young guys are drafted, you know, Mike Gesicki, nice kid, not mature enough to be in the NFL. I just had a conversation with Devontae Parker, and it was probably yesterday, and I'm going to write something about it this weekend. First real grown-up conversation I've had with him about him finally realizing, hey, this is hard. This is hard, and it's not meant for the meek. And when I say this, I mean being in the NFL. The NFL,
being successful.
Yeah, no, being in the NFL.
Oh, okay.
The NFL is a meat grinder, and if you're not mentally and physically tough, it will grind you up and spit you out. Leonta Carew was a third-round pick. You don't think how humbling it was for him to be cut and spend the majority of the year on the practice squad while he watches a newcomer, Albert Wilson, tear this offense up and watches Jakeem Grant, a guy drafted after him, have success. And it was humbling. Gets released. Nobody's claiming him. Dolphins bring him back on the practice squad. And he's thankful because his dream is still alive. But only until you get into those situations and experiences do you get it.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get as a 20-year-old that's being told you're
entitled,
great.
You're great, everything's handed to you, superstardom is just waiting for me. Devontae Parker, I'm a first-round pick. I'm going to ball. I have all this ability in the world.
If you're Jeff Thomas, you're probably thinking the same thing. I'm at Miami. I'm playing well. I'm one of the star players here. I'm going to go to the league.
Yeah.
Soon,
yeah.
And I want more targets so I can go even higher in the draft.
Yeah.
Which is probably among the issues here.
I don't know the young man. I've never met the young man. I don't know what's going on with the university. All I can talk about is what I know based on my experience, what leads to immediate suspension is bad.
Yeah.
It's not, I want more balls. give me more balls. That's not it. Mm-hmm. It's not, I don't want to be part of your team. I'm not showing up to practice. You're suspended. An immediate dismissal?
Yeah.
Like, you've had to have lit Mark Richt's office on fire.
we'll get some more details on it in the next hour. Manny Navarro will join us. But again, the University of Miami receiver Jeff Thomas has been dismissed from the program. Coming up next, we're joined by Robert Littell of Black Sports Online. Radio.com. Radio.com.